Welcome to Marcel's Margarita Madness, the podcast for margarita and tequila lovers. Without further ado, here's your host, the madman of margaritas himself, Marcel Brown.
Welcome back to another episode of Marcel's Margarita Madness. I am Marcel Brown, the madman of margaritas. And today I have a very special guest. Her name is Ruthie Marlinet, and she is the author of a book called Agave Blues, which has won 5 screenplay awards, and I'll let her tell you more about that later. She's also author of Curse of the Ninth and Isabella's Island, which intrigued me because my older daughter's name is Isabella. So how are you doing today, Ruthie?
I'm doing just great. Thanks for having me, Marcel.
Absolutely. Thank you for being on the show. So before I start talking to Ruthie about her book and her background on tequila, I just wanted to give you the story of how I got connected with Ruthie. So while I was preparing for the launch of this podcast, plus also cleaning up and rebranding my old margarita blog, I had a thought. Should I capitalize the word tequila or not? And I had always been capitalizing margarita because, honestly, I just felt like it, but also because by legend, margarita is the name of a woman that the drink was named after. So it made sense to capitalize margarita. But I had never, prior to that, thought about capitalizing tequila. So, of course, I went to Google and I searched, should I capitalize tequila? And one of the very first hits was an article called To Capitalize Tequila or Not. And I went and read this article. And the author of the article said that they were writing an upcoming novel that featured tequila, and she wanted to know if capitalized or not. And she gave some very good arguments as to why to capitalize tequila. Anyway, I read that article. I was very convinced. But then I thought, well, if this person's writing about tequila, maybe they'll make a great guest for this podcast. So I reached out to Ruthie, and she was gracious enough to agree to be on this show. So once again, thank you for being on the show, Ruthie. And why don't you tell us a little bit about your background with tequila and how you became a fan?
So again, thank you, Marcel, for having me on this show, and congratulations. I hope it's a huge success going forward.
Thank you.
How did I come across tequila? Well, I wrote a story about agave. My family, my mother's side of the family, is from a region in Mexico called, just outside of Guadalajara, Jalisco. It's a region called Los Altos, and specifically Jesus Maria, which is, Los Altos is the highland region of where the agave is grown. The town of Tequila is a little bit lower, mm-hmm. lowland. So I set out to write this story, not necessarily about the tequila, because growing up as a girl, while I do remember the fields and all that, I remember the zapateria, the shoe store down the down the cobblestone street from my cousins. Anyway, I set out to write a story about a woman from Los Angeles who gets a call to return. Now, in Spanish, there's a saying, "La sangre atrae." The blood calls you back. And I think I can say that in my blood is some tequila. So I returned to do some, I had already written the story, maybe even the screenplay, but I had to go down and really go back. I had to go back, return to my roots. And so I returned, and it just hit me. There's an aroma once you get to the distillery or the fabrica, it's just this beautiful aroma that you smell, and once you taste it right out of the hornos, which are the ovens, it's the same. So when you can find a bottle that tastes the same as the region, it just kind of takes you back too. So
wow.
As for my story, I went down there and I worked. It wasn't really work, but I sampled, I bottled, I traversed the fields, I interviewed relatives and other people that worked there. And when I say there, the place was called, back in the time, Rancho Olvidado. actually, no, Rancho Olvido. Oh, no, Olvidado, the forgotten one. I reference it in my book, Olvidados, the forgotten, Olvidados, singular, the forgotten one. And it's now called Sagrada Corazón de Jesús in the region of El Paraíso. And they renamed it Nom, and you probably know this, Nom 1580. Nom is Norma Oficial Mexicano. So they get the number if it comes directly from that factory.
Okay.
So yeah, I interviewed relatives and people around there, and just so appreciated the hard work of family and ancestors. My story, Agave Blues, is about the ancestors that worked the field. And a little disclaimer, it's a magical realism type of fiction. And why not? I mean, that's a beautiful way to tell a story. As a matter of fact, my tagline or my pitch is mix together a little, let me just read it here. Mix together a little family, drama, ghosts, and tequila, and you get a hell of a cocktail. And as I'm reading it here, my publisher or editor did not capitalize tequila.
Oh, no.
I have to send it back. But no, the book is, all throughout the book, it is capitalized. And thank you for reading that story. I mean, it was a struggle. I mean, I see how they capitalize champagne and scotch. And why not tequila? It comes.
Absolutely.
It comes from the region. As long as it comes from the region, you must capitalize it. Tequila is a real town. So that is a little bit about how I came to write this story.
Yeah.
And how it has to relate to agave. Agave Blues has to relate to tequila.
Very good.
I recently had a book signing for Valentine's, and my lead in was the heart of the agave, which is the piña, which is the center from where all the nectar comes and the juice and the sweetness for the tequila, the pulque, and I think it's a metaphor for life, the heart of the agave. And to see what I mean, or to read what I mean, you can pick up my book.
Absolutely.
It's all in there. I've thrown everything in, the whole kitchen sink, the distillery, the factory, the ghosts, the family, the drama. It's all in the book. But and I try not to beat you over the head with like a Wikipedia description of how things are made or how they came to be. So I kind of weave it in. I hope I've done a good job doing that. Yeah.
Well, sure. Well, and if it's won 5 screenplay awards already, I think you've obviously done a good job. I've only read the first chapter or two so far, since I just came across your book very recently. So, and it has already sucked me in. So I'm very curious to see where it goes. And of course, read more about the background of how tequila is made, which I think I would say most of us that are at least like tequila enough to have researched about it, understand that it comes from the agave plant, comes from the Jalisco region, that there's a highland and a lowland and this type of stuff. But honestly, the details of how the families or the people work the fields and harvest it, and how plant ages, I think for 8 years or something like this before it is ready for turning into tequila, is
right.
All very fascinating and not something that I am super familiar with, but I obviously love to learn more.
Yeah, I'm learning more every day. I looked at some notes this morning because I've learned, and I think I wrote about it, there's a new iteration of the tequila, which is they take it from the joven, the little agaves that haven't reached maturity yet. So it's like you mentioned, I think it's 8 to 12 years are ready for harvest. The jovens are 3 years. So I can't imagine. I mean, I'm sure it tastes good, but it just seems, it doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem right.
Well, I'd be curious to research that now to see what that is like.
I think it's crystal, something like that. So it's a new one. There's all kinds of new ones. And mixtos, again, 100% agave is what you want. Not the, well, You can have the mix though, but and that's good. That's good for your margaritas. But if you're going to get the 100% from this region, it's a nice sipping tequila, too.
Absolutely, and I personally don't think the mixtos are good in margaritas because the flavor of most mixtos that I've had is just nowhere near real tequila, and I think it affects the flavor of the margarita as well.
And it gives you a big headache.
Yep, exactly. That's what I told people. That's if you've heard my episode on tequila and my margarita recipe as well. I talk about that and how I think that's why so many people have had a bad experience, or
they think
they've had a bad experience with tequila, but no, they've had a bad experience with a mixto, and it's just not the same thing. Yeah, you should never mix your liquors is the cardinal rule. So right out of the bottle. So I've tried a few Cristalinos. I've seen the trend now, and I've liked the few I've had so far, but I'm curious to see where the younger aged agave plants, where they come into the mix. So definitely keep an eye on that. And I think that's the wonderful thing about tequila, is just like any other spirit or food or wine, where it's grown, it's the specific area it's grown, how it's grown, how it's harvested, how it's produced after the fact, makes such a difference, and there's such a variety.
Right. And there's a difference between the highland and the lowlands too. Lowlands have more of a volcanic flavor to it, a more of a spicy flavor, you know, because they happen to be in the area where the volcanoes had erupted years ago, thousands of years ago. And the ones in Los Altos, the highland region, they're a little sweeter. So
I agree. I've always said to people that, in my experience, the lowlands, to me, my description was always earthier,
right?
Maybe sometimes stronger tasting. And the highlands seem to be lighter and smoother. Sweeter could be a term as well, I think. So I generally preferred the highlands in a margarita because it's just a much smoother blend. But I tell people that if I taste a margarita and to me it tastes like old school or traditional, I'm thinking that the tequila they used probably was a lowland. So you're getting kind of that earthier flavor to it. And interesting you say volcanic, makes sense, I think, as well. I've never heard it described that way, but hey, you know, that's makes sense. You know about the region more than I do. So let's talk a few tequilas. Why don't you tell me a few of your favorites?
Well, I have a favorite. It is Señor Río. I was going to show you a picture, but it's a radio podcast. Mm-hmm. Señor Río, as a matter of fact, I repped them for a little. I repped the product for a little bit because I, like you, you found me on the internet. I found this tequila because I needed something. I wanted to do a tasting for my book signing, and I came across a woman who happened to have the same story as my fictional character. She's the real deal. Mm-hmm. She inherited a tequila farm. I inherited a story is all I got. But a delicious, delicious tequila. My favorite is the Reposado. Mm-hmm. So that's, again, Señor Río. Another one is from exactly the same region I come from, and it's the NOM 1580 from Sagrada Corazón de Jesús. It's they have it at Total Wine, so it's just NOM 1580, and try the two for comparison for the very subtle differences in the lowland and the highland. We have a local restaurant called Tequilas. And they have about 170 tequilas. So
wow.
I'm only on the 168 right now. No. No, I sip it, mm-hmm. and that's about all. And every once in a while, I'll have, I love margaritas, but the margaritas sometimes, we've got the sugars and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I like the fresh squeezed margaritas.
Right.
What are those called? The skinny ones.
Mm.
So. But there are a lot of Margaret. There are a lot of tequilas out there, and especially I wrote another little story, which you can find about. Let me just back up. One of the reasons I wanted to write this story too was the family farm in the book, much like the reality, was in trouble. There was a drought back in 2007, and a lot of the Mexican farms were plowing under or selling them off. I had one uncle who had a distillery, ended up selling it to Japanese investors. People were just struggling, and in comes George Clooney, Mark Wahlberg, The Rock, the Jenner 818, which is the area code where I used to live in Los Angeles. But they were buying up the farms, and they are making a killing. I think George Clooney just sold his. I think that billion came into the conversation, billions. So it's a hot thing, right? I mean, it's a wonderful thing. And so my story was about trying to keep that farm in the family, and we'll see whether she gets to do it, whether she does it or not. And my research also took me to places like agaves being researched at the University of Guadalajara for medicinal purposes and cancer treatments. It's not a cure, but there's a treatment. So the agave itself is such a wonderful, wonderful plant, and we get the wonderful tequila from it. I think I've just gone off the cliff here somewhere.
That's okay. No, we were talking about tequilas, which makes sense that you went this route. And that's honestly what I want to hear is more of your stories and
Right.
your experience with tequila. I will say that I generally drinking tequila in a margarita, I like the reposados. When I'm sipping them on ice, then a variety of the añejos, or now the cristalinos, are I think are very, very good. And I will say that my margarita recipe is very simple, just fresh squeezed lime juice, like you said. That's the way to go. I use agave nectar
Oh
as a
yeah.
sweetener, and then tequila. And I do also occasionally, if I want to kick it up a little bit, I will put some Patron orange citrange liqueur, which Patron has never, I've never been able to definitively find out how they make this orange liqueur, but because it's from Patron, I'm going to guess that they probably make it from the agave plant. It certainly smells that way when you open the bottle, but it's a nice smooth blend. So generally speaking, my margaritas are relatively skinny because I only put so much agave nectar in there to add the sweetener. But certainly you can, I've made it with less than I normally do for people that really want to keep it either less sweet or want to keep the calories down. So anyway, I read that George Clooney sold his brand to, yeah, I think it was in the billions of dollars or $1 billion somewhere in there, which I thought was amazing. But
Yeah.
yeah, it certainly has become hot, and I hope to maybe meet some of these tequila entrepreneurs in the future and get them here on the podcast.
That would be great. When I came back from with the story idea, actually I came back with a business proposal first. One of my uncles wanted me to help distribute it here to the States. So I did reach out to Sammy Hagar. He has Cabo Wabo, still going strong, I think.
As far
Anyway, it
as I
was
know.
so it was like, I'm not a business. I don't want to do this. Really, I mean, there's too many other complications, as you can read in the book, reasons why my character wasn't going to be able to do it or didn't want to do it. So it's got a little bit of me infused in there, but I wasn't prepared to take this on. So, like I say, I came away with the story. I'm a novel, I'm a writer, I'm not a tequila salesperson. Now I wish I would have.
Well, I think the best salesperson is someone that enjoys tequila. So there you go. But you never know where that will take you. But
No.
definitely want to read the rest of the story and get more of that background. So as far as I asked you about some of your favorites, I am certainly not as experienced as some tequila aficionados, but what I've discovered is that there's a lot of good tequilas that are relatively low cost. There's a lot of tequilas that are, say, their name has raised their price quite a bit. And so I enjoy the different varieties to see where the, you know, how they taste at what price point. Probably my overall favorite one at a reasonable price point is Don Julio. I've always just found that to be very smooth and just great tasting. And I've had a variety of people taste Don Julio with some others, and they tend to agree it's a really nice one. I actually came across a really nice añejo at a really low cost of the Camarena brand. Mm-hmm. I've always used that brand. I should say I always used it, but I very often use that brand for my margaritas. And for a long time, I didn't think they made it an añejo, and I stumbled across it here recently. So that's a nice one to have over ice. A nice, rich flavor at a very, very reasonable cost. So that's a couple that I like. Do you have any other thoughts on some tequilas you've tried?
Any other thoughts? Well, like as I mentioned, I repped this particular brand, Don Señor Rio, mm-hmm. but I got an opportunity to look around at other ones that were being sold, and there was one that was a reasonable price. I think it was Señor Gonzalez. Have you heard of that one?
I can't recall.
That one was flying off the shelves. So Don Julio was one. That's one that, you know, for parties, that's the one people would pull out. And, you know, it was very impressive, too, to pull out the Don Julio. Is that the 42? Which is the Año?
They have a 1942
right.
Uh-huh. label, but I'm not familiar with all their varieties. I just know that the standard one, I think, is just Don Julio. Then they've got the 1942 one. I know they've had a 70th anniversary one that was very good as well. So again, I'm not the world's most foremost authority in all tequilas, but I'm trying to get there. And so I love talking to other people about tequilas and see what they've experienced.
Well, and I rediscovered Nom 1580 from the region of Jesus Maria, Jalisco, and I'm waiting for an occasion to open that up. Although I should say every day is a good occasion, right? So
I think so.
Yeah. As long as you're sipping it and enjoying conversation and family, and every day is a celebration.
I agree. And, you know, a lot of people assume that you're supposed to shoot tequila. And I've like, that's not, you really shouldn't. Unless you're just wanting to take a shot for some reason. But that being said, I think it's just much more enjoyable to take 10 or 15 minutes and sip it, you know, rather than shooting it down. Especially the finer tequilas, you really get the flavor. You get to taste the details. If you just shoot it down, you miss it all. Especially then if you follow it with salt and all that, you're just not really getting the flavor. So for those of you who are listening, definitely, you know, try sipping tequilas more. You can do it over ice. Just you can do it without ice if you want, and you get different. Yeah, you get some different flavor profiles with or without ice. Certainly, it's easier, I think, if you're new to sipping tequila or any really stronger alcohol, that the ice helps make it smoother, easier to take down. But ultimately, I've sipped tequilas that were room temperature, and you get a different flavor experience, and it's great. So I encourage people to try that.
Yeah. The initial, I'm not going to say it's not a burn. It's the initial taste with your tongue. And then as it goes down your throat and it drips down your esophagus, I mean, it's an experience. And why would you want to rush that? Why would you want to rush that experience? I mean, throwing it back is another experience too, but it depends on the experience, I guess, that you want to have. But it's an enjoyable journey if you're just sipping it.
I agree. I mean, people should treat it like wine and any other alcohol that's kind of on that fine nature. Take your time with it. I think people probably have come to the impression of shooting tequila because, again, if they're drinking really bad tequila, which again is not often not real tequila, it's mixto, then it doesn't taste great and you just want to get it down quickly. So find some good tequila and enjoy it. Take your time with it and taste the flavors, because especially if you get the opportunity to do a tasting of different brands, it's amazing just how different each tequila can taste. And, you know, you get the familiar, very similar to wine. You get the familiar wine taste, you get the familiar tequila taste, but beyond the core of it, there's spiciness, there's fruitiness, there's sweet notes, there's all kinds. It's a very complex spirit. And especially so if you get the opportunity to try several back to back to see the differences, it's amazing. You'll really start to appreciate the differences in the different tequilas.
Absolutely. And it's fun to kind of pick those notes out, like you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tasting here, how is this different from the next distillery or farm? Mm-hmm. And it is like wine, you know, the wines that come from the hills, or the wines that come from the valleys, or the wines that come from the, you know, like the river sides up in Washington. I mean, they're all, you can call all of them, for instance, Chardonnay, but they're not tasting the same. There's mm-hmm. there's a Chardonnay or there's a tequila for every palate.
I agree. And as I've done some tastings with people, you can tell people just like certain ones that everyone has their own palate. Like you said, there is a tequila for everyone out there. So before we wrap it up today, Ruthie, I want to know a little bit more. You've talked about your book pretty much, but is there anything else you want to share about the book or the background of the book? Anything to get people to want to pick it up and read it?
Well, Agave Blues was also received an honorable mention from the International Latino Book Awards under the Isabel Allende Most Inspirational Book. She's Isabel Allende is she's my hero when it comes to Latin writers and magical realism. So that was an honor to be able to be honored.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So, mm-hmm. I did my research for this book, but as I think I mentioned earlier, I am my mom's family is from that region of Jalisco, so I'm half Mexican, and I do believe I've got some tequila running through my veins.
Mm-hmm.
So you can find my book, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, online, wherever books are sold. And this book is very special to me, close to my heart, the heart of the agave. And I would be so honored if listeners would go out and buy the book, buy some tequila. Oh, you have some tequila, and then enjoy the book as well.
Well, I will certainly do that. And I'm going to make sure to put into the show notes the brands that you mentioned today, and probably run out and get some. I have happened to have a gift certificate to Total Wine. So I think I will head out that direction soon and pick up one of those tequilas and drink it while I finish reading your book. Okay,
yes.
Two of them. Yes.
Well, the one from the lowlands and the one from the highlands. And let me know if you can pick out the difference.
I will definitely do that. Maybe I'll have you back on and we'll do a tasting of those, and then we can discuss them as we taste them. Since you're the one that introduced them to me, I think, you know, I'll have you back on at some point soon and we can discuss those. Sound good?
I look forward to it. I look forward to it.
Well, very good. Well, Ruthie, it was an absolute pleasure to talk to you. And again, everyone pick up her book, Agave Blues. It is available, like she said, on Amazon and Apple at minimum, and probably where all books are sold. So anyway, once again, thank you, Ruthie. And until next time, this is Marcel, the Madman of Margaritas, signing off. Salute.
Thank you for listening to Marcel's Margarita Madness. Remember to follow the podcast so you don't miss an episode. And make sure to check out marcellsmargaritamadness.com for extra details on this episode, as well as more mouth-watering margarita madness.